Frank Ling.
And I'm Charles Lee.
And you're listening to the Grok Science Show.
That's right. It's a weekly look at the world of science, technology, and their effects on our daily lives. Coming up on today's program, Mr. Jim Motovalli will join us to discuss high voltage.
So stay tuned for all of this.
Plus the Grokatron 5000.
And our world famous question a week.
Coming right up.
Here.
On the Groks
Science Show.
The Grok's Science Show. Well, transportation accounts for about a third of all carbon dioxide emissions in America, and cars and trucks are the biggest source of our smog pollution. In fact, there's a powerful case to be made for cleaner cars. Well, joining us today to discuss this issue is Mr. Jim Motovalli. Mr. Motovalli is the noted author of the New York Times Automobile Section, who has a weekly syndicated Wheels column. He is the author of Forward Drive, and his most recent release, High Voltage, the Fast Track to Plug in the Auto Industry, explores this topic for a general audience. And Mr. Motovalli, we're very pleased to have you today on the Grok Science Show.
Hey, it's great to be on Grok Science Radio.
I'm sure everyone knows about the electric car, but what's the state of technology and its penetrance into the market now?
Well, after a lot of false starts, I think the electric car is finally off and running. We have two vehicles on the market right now, or two main ones, which are the Chevy Volt and the Nissan Leaf. And those have been out for a few months now. The Leaf has done about 8,500 sales in the U.S., and the Volt probably about 6,100 sales. The Volt has had a few setbacks, particularly related to battery fires. But I think the electric car is here to stay. We have a bunch of other ones coming out, both from independent automakers and from companies like Ford, which just introduced its electric version of the Focus. But there will be a whole lot of other mainstream electric vehicles, from the Mitsubishi I to the C-Max Energy, also from Ford. A lot of these will be out within the next year, and I think we'll have a full field of electric vehicles. A lot of them are ramping up by starting in a few key markets, mostly on the coasts. So it'll take a little while for them to be available in all 50 states. Right now they're not quite there yet. And we also have in common with this the opening of the public charging infrastructure, so that in key cities there are now charging stations. Just in my town of Fairfield, Connecticut, there's now four charging stations. And I hadn't even noticed that they were there. I just suddenly saw them there, two of them at Whole Foods. So quietly, the electric car is appearing on the market. I think it'll start out slowly. I think it'll take a while for people to understand exactly what they are. And there will be several variations, both the all-battery electric car, like the Leaf, or the plug-in hybrid, like the Volt, and the regular hybrid will also continue. So there will be a bunch of different technologies for the public to choose from.
And that is, of course, part of the challenge is the infrastructure for charging these cars.
Well, it's not as big a problem as people think it is, because 80% of charging will be done at home using a garage-based 240-volt charger. And that will charge an electric vehicle in 4 to 8 hours. And I think there'll be a lot of technology in place so that you will be encouraged and easily enabled to charge your car in off-peak hours, like from midnight to 6 or something like that. And I think utilities will be offering very low electric rates at that time. I think they should have been doing that a little quicker than they are, but I expect that to be in place. In some markets now, you can get electricity for 2 cents a kilowatt hour in sort of a special EV rate, because there is no real problem in terms of electric capacity to charge vehicles at night. There would be a big challenge if everybody came home at 6 p.m. From their commute and plugged in then. So it's very important that that not happen. You could plug your car in at 6, but it won't actually start charging till midnight. If we assure that that happens, then we don't need to build any new power plants for these things.
Is that part of the incentive structure, do you think, for the cars, is really the cost per mile? You think it'll drive
it? One of the major advantages. I think charging up, say, a Ford Focus electric, the whole charge is like $2, and then you're good for 100 miles. Maybe one way of looking at it another way is 2 cents or 3 cents a mile, which is compared to maybe 30 cents a mile for a gas car. So the operating costs are a whole lot lower. The main problems, the main detriments, the things you have to deal with are the 100-mile range and the higher purchase cost, because electric cars start at around $30,000.
So in comparison then to the hybrids, it'll be a longer transition?
I don't think there'll be a jump to electrics right away. I think it'll start slowly and build from there. I think right now there's a lot of advantages to both the hybrid and the plug-in hybrid formats. It's sort of a gradual thing. You could think of yourself as weaning yourself slowly off of gasoline. You know, when you take the route of the hybrid car followed by the plug-in hybrid, which uses a lot less gas but still uses gas, and then the battery electric, which is gas-free and zero emission. So it's a process, you know, that I think people are likely to go through. The great advantage of the plug-in hybrid, which somebody like Jay Leno could tell you, is that it doesn't have any range anxiety. It can go like 400 miles on a fill-up. And after you've exhausted the electric range, which could be from 10 to 50 miles, then it automatically goes into gas mode. And I expect cars like that to do very well in the marketplace, especially if they can get the price on them down. The battery electric, I think, will start to pick up, particularly as battery technology gets better and the range extends beyond 100 miles. 100 miles is a bit of a challenge, particularly because in colder weather, like you might see, you're based in Chicago, right? One of those Chicago winters, you might see your 100-mile range go to 65 miles.
What really is the state of battery technology? Is it?
I think right now the lithium-ion battery is able to give a reasonably sized car about 100-mile range. I don't think we're going to see huge advantages in that, but it's interesting to note that early in 2012, Tesla will come out with the Model S, and that's an all-electric sedan that is available with 300-mile range. To do that, they had to put an enormous battery in that car, something like 85 kilowatt hours, maybe almost three times the size of the battery in the Nissan Leaf. But they're able to do that without it, you know, compromising any interior space, and it fits in the same compartment as the 160-mile battery that they also offer. So I think that was a big accomplishment. We haven't actually seen the car yet, but I think the Model S will be very impressive, particularly considering it's also a very high-performance car. So you get like a lot of versatility, but you know the downside is that it'll be $50,000 after the federal income tax credit.
Who really are the big players right now in terms of developing these cars?
Well, I would say in terms of the major automakers, I would say Ford, Toyota, Honda, Daimler, all these companies, BMW, all of them are putting out electric cars of one form or another and plug-in hybrids. There's a full field of them coming. And as independent players, there's a bunch of companies too, and these include Tesla Motors, which is probably the first modern car on the road with a Tesla Roadster introduced back in 2006. And they've sold almost 2,000 of those, I think, at this point. And also Fisker, which is coming out with a plug-in hybrid, and that's hitting the road right now. First ones are on the market. It's a very high-performance car called the Karma. Again, the plug-in hybrid and maybe 50 miles of all-electric range, and then 300 miles on with a gas engine running. But that'll be around $100,000. That's a pretty expensive car. And then other competitors in the field include Koda, which has just entered the market with a little Chinese-made sedan that's available. I think that's around $40,000, and it has 130-mile range, which is a little better than average. And then there are companies like WeGo, which has another little Chinese-made car on the market. They don't like to talk about the Chinese thing because it's essentially a Chinese platform that they put a lot of American-made hardware into. So they say it's a very much an enhanced Chinese platform. But there are these players out there, so they're startups as well as the established players.
How much of its adoption do you think will be global, in places like China or even in Europe, for example?
Well, in my book, High Voltage, I go through the markets I think are going to be the largest ones. Right now, the U.S. definitely is in the lead when it comes to getting cars on the road. We have far more than anywhere else in the world. But I expect the U.S. to be eclipsed by China in relatively short order. China is very determined to electrify its vehicle fleet, largely because of its incredible pollution. But it's not only that. They also have a very large domestic battery industry that benefits when cars go electric. And they have companies like BYD, which is not only a battery company but a car maker. And they hope to compete in the American market with both a battery car and a plug-in hybrid. So you have huge government subsidies from the Chinese government. You can get something like $20,000 in rebates if you buy an electric car there. And the government is very much encouraging automakers to roll out EVs. Their big problem now is they don't have the capacity yet. But I expect there to be a dozen Chinese players on the road. There are so many car makers in China, I mean, far eclipsing ours in the West. So I expect them to be the lead player in fairly short order, within a couple of years, and also to have cars on the market in the U.S. When you think about it, you wonder why there aren't Chinese cars on the road now, considering that they make so many other things that we buy. Their problem has been they haven't been able to make cars that are safe enough for the American market, but I think they'll be able to address that issue. So I think China will be a big player. Another one I would point out, and I also wrote a chapter on this in High Voltage, is about Iceland, which is on track to be the first all-electric vehicle infrastructure. They're pretty determined about that. They had originally put their bets on hydrogen, but I think hydrogen is no longer the focus of their energy economy. Now they're looking at electric vehicles. So those are both chapters in High Voltage. In Europe, I wish things were moving a little faster. There's a lot of reasons that electric vehicles could be very well adopted in Europe. Certainly, it's very environmentally focused, and gas prices are very high, and the distance between cities and stuff isn't that bad. So I would think that would be a good reason. However, diesel technology has moved very quickly in Europe, and that's the dominant environmentally focused high mileage tech. So I'm not sure what's going to happen with EVs there. I see a lot of incentives for it, a lot of government regulation that calls for reducing the carbon output of cars. So you would think electrification would be taking off there. But the European automakers have been a little slow. But BMW, Daimler, they're going to get there. And there's also a focus in Europe on hydrogen-powered cars. And a number of automakers, including Daimler in Europe, are going to be putting those on the road in 2015. So that's I see a little bit more focus on that in Europe, because Germany will have a big hydrogen infrastructure by then.
Are electric cars actually cleaner? Because eventually the power has to come from somewhere, and it's going to be a power plant. Of course, the batteries, which may need to be disposed of after time.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because that is the most commonly asked question I get, which is, aren't you just replacing the pollution from the tailpipe with a smokestack? And I understand why people bring that up, because zero emission is kind of a misnomer when you do have to get the power from somewhere. But I did do the math in that, and I found that if you take a battery car and you charge it up in an all-coal environment, I was just out in Indiana doing a talk about this, and in Indiana it's a 96% coal grid, so that's probably the closest you're going to get. But if you were to plug in an electric car in Indiana, you'd get pretty much the well-to-wheels equivalent of a Toyota Prius. So you still make huge gains. And I should point out, the other thing that people bring up a lot is what happens to the batteries at the end of their life. I get that question a real lot. And that is really not something people should worry about so much, because the lithium-ion batteries that are in electric cars are not toxic like the lead-acid batteries that are in our cars today. plus the lithium in them will be recovered, and electric car batteries will have a second life with utilities as backup storage, particularly for renewable energy. So there's not a lot to worry about with end-of-life batteries. And as a consumer, you get a warranty for something like 10 years.
How really has, do you think, the environment changed since, you know, the mid-90s when the EV1 came out? What do you think now is different that is going to propel the electric car to success?
A lot of things have changed since the EV1. As you may recall, the EV1 sold maybe 600 to 1,000 vehicles. And when it first appeared, it was a lead-acid battery car, not all that different from what we had in the 1920s, which was the first heyday of the electric vehicle. And there's a reason for that. There really wasn't much development on batteries from the years 1920 to 1990. Not a whole lot had been done because we put so much faith in the internal combustion engine. But today, we've developed lithium-ion batteries that have much higher energy density, and we can get 100 miles out of an electric vehicle, and we have powerful regulations that demand the automakers get to 54.5 miles per gallon by 2025. So that's a big driver. That really is makes a difference. And we also have global warming is a big issue, and peak oil, which is something that people talk about, and I believe in strongly that we may be near or even have reached peak oil. So we have to look beyond the internal combustion engine to the electrification of the automobile. And you've even got people who are big V8 supporters like Bob Lutz of GM saying that the electrification of the automobile is inevitable. So I don't think there's any turning back at this point. We're not going back to V8s, and gasoline isn't going back to being 30 cents a gallon. Very few people believe that would happen.
And do you have a particular model of electric vehicle that you're particularly keen on at the moment?
Well, if I had $41,000, I'd probably buy a Chevy Volt because I love the range extender idea. And I do sometimes go on long trips, and it would be nice to take the car. I'd like the batteries in electric vehicles to get a little more than 100 miles and less in cold weather. I think that's important, and I think we will see that. I expect that battery cost and efficiency will increase 50%. And well, the cost will come down 50%, and the efficiency will increase 50% over the next 3 to 5 years. So we'll have routinely 200-mile batteries in EVs, and we will have much cheaper packs. Right now, you're talking about $10,000 to $30,000 for an EV pack. And there's no way you can offer cheap cars when the batteries cost that much. We really need, say, a $20,000 electric car, and that is not on the market now. Certainly the federal income tax credit helps a lot, but we're still not anywhere close to $20,000. I should point out, though, that there are state subsidies that really help. In California, there's a $2,500 purchase offset, so you get the money right away. Hawaii has $4,500. It depends on where you live. Some states don't charge any income tax on electric cars. So, not income tax, but sales tax. So there's some definite incentives state by state, but we really need to just get the basic cost of the car down. I mean, it's competitive now if you look at the operating costs and what would be your entire cost of ownership over 10 years. But the high purchase price is still an obstacle.
What do you think the world would be like if it was completely run by electric cars? Do you think it would be Eden?
Well, it's funny. You have people like Larry Burns of GM who always said that the electric vehicle or the hydrogen vehicle would take the automobile out of the environmental equation. And I don't think it really does that because they still take up space on the road. They still cause congestion, even if they're not producing any tailpipe emissions. So I think the ultimate solution is probably to get us all in public transit. But the sorry state of public transit in the U.S. leaves a lot to be desired. We're not anywhere close to that. As I mentioned, I was just out in Indiana, and there's just the only way of getting around is a fairly decrepit bus system, and they're defunding that. And there are a lot of obstacles. I think light rail is great, and some cities have applied that very successfully. But when you compare us to Europe, or even compare us to where we were in 1920, when there were 300,000 miles of rail compared to 150,000 now, we really tore up a really great public transit system. So electric cars are the best choice to move Americans around, considering that we live in a largely suburbanized society.
Most American cities were built around the car.
Very much so.
Yeah. Well, it is a challenge for the future, but really a very fascinating book. And again, the book is called High Voltage, The Fast Track to Plug in the Auto Industry. And Mr. Motovalli, I want to thank you very much for joining us today on the Grok Science Show.
Great to be on.
And you were just listening to
Mr. Jim Motovalli
discussing the
High Voltage.
This is the Grok Science Show. Coming up in just a few minutes is the Grokatron 5000, so stay tuned.
Well, it's time to play our game. It's called the Grokatron 5000. It is our supercomputer, formerly known as Deep Blue. And today, the Grokatron 5000 has chosen the topic, powered by gas or electric. So, for the following five individuals, the Grokatron 5000 would like to know, be gas-powered or electric, and maybe a little reason why. Are you ready to play the game?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. Gas-powered or electric, it's the golfer Tiger Woods.
Gas-powered, because he's not thinking he's definitely not a forward thinker.
Yeah. All right, how about number two? It's host Simon Cowell.
Definitely gas-powered, very retro sort of guy. I can't see him driving a Prius or an electric car. He doesn't seem like the type. His model seems to be stuck in the 50s.
Well, he certainly spews a lot of gas on the show, I'd say.
Spews a lot of gas.
Okay, number three, it's Mr. Environmentalism himself, Al Gore.
Al Gore is 100% electric. He's been a supporter of this technology forever. He's an early buyer of the Fisker Karma, and I give him a lot of credit. He would be zero emission sort of guy.
Mm-hmm. Number four, it's the singer Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga, I think, would probably be... I'd put her in a hybrid. She's a little more progressive than your average dance-pop singer, and she's taken some stands that could be construed as controversial, so I'll give her a little bit of progressive thinking there. Maybe not a full electric, but a hybrid.
Okay. All right, and finally, number five, it's Oprah Winfrey.
Oprah Winfrey, I would put also in a hybrid. I think she could be a little more adventurous in her choices. Like, she should be putting my book into her book club. She hasn't done that yet.
Well, you're in our book club, at least, and I hope that'll suffice. So.
Okay, good.
All right. Well, Mr. Motovalli, I want to thank you very much for sticking around and playing our game, the Grokatron 5000, and talking about your book, High Voltage, The Fast Track to Plug in the Auto Industry. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Grok Science Show.
Make sure you tune in next week for more from the world of science and technology.
If you'd like to contact us here, you can email us at science@grok.net. For Grok Science, I'm Frank Ling.
And I'm Charles Lee. Make sure you also see us on the web at www.grok.net. Have a great afternoon and keep on grokking.